Blog Talk Radio.
Listening to Bad Company with Gray Eyes Smith, and tonight's show is brought to you by a group on allpoetry.com called Late Night Poets. We also have anthologies available on Amazon.com with poems from poets around the world, so feel free to check those out and help support these shows. That said, tonight's show is based on a contest that Louie Wildove and myself ran called Your Favorite Poem of 2021, and so that's what we will be reading tonight. And I'm just going to check the studio real quick here. Oh, we have a caller. Pam, how are you?
Hey, great. Do you know where I can find some bad company?
Yeah, you found it, really boring. Right?
So how's it going?
It's going good, thank you. And how are you?
Oh, so doing good. Just chilling and, you know, looking forward to enjoying everybody's favorite poetry of 2021. So,
all right,
cool.
I appreciate it. Very cool. Okay, I'm going to grab the first poem here. And would you mind reading this, Pam?
I would be happy.
Thank you. All right.
And this is El Dorado by Pacifica. And it goes like this. Beware, young man, the land that lies beyond the fastest sea and lures intrepid travelers towards its shimmering shores. Their trees, 'tis said, is tendrilled forest, tangled out the sun. Bear fruit whose taste is of that which cursed the lips of Eve. By wondrous walls of temples which clutched in tentacles of green still rise, defiant of the greedy growth that would engulf, digest, destroy the buildings of an ancient race. Erase the signs that silence speak, carved out on their massive stones, in age-lost tongues to none, but whatsoever learned ghosts may glide between the giant trees and sigh against their leaves. 'Tis rumored streams there gleam with gold and rivers of it flow, in valleys lined with garnet hills and caves of amethyst. And some believe that Eden torn away from its old place by godly wrath now hides within that country's desert tracks, and men have died in search of it while wandering the waste, succumbed to thirst upon the ground the flaming sword has scorched. Beware, I lay the land that lies beyond the vasted sea and lures intrepid ones like you towards its shimmering shores. For madness lurks in wait behind its mounds of precious stones and ugly death beneath the golden waters of its streams. End poem.
Fantastic read, Pam. And, you know, this is a powerfully descriptive poem taking you on a journey through this fantasy land of death and harboring evil. I thought it was quite powerful and a well-written storyline. What did you think, Pam?
I have to agree. I see that they wrote this in blank verse, which is a form I've never attempted before. As far as I understand from blank verse, it's non-rhyming poem done in a specific meter, which, you know, explains why this did flow really nicely. So that was really kudos to them on that technical level there. I have to say it is a really great storyline. I like that they took a well-known lost city like El Dorado and then added, like, told the story in such a way as if a younger man was being forewarned perhaps by somebody who had been there before who was older and had known all the stories. I like how there's that tidbit of wisdom passed along. And I even like how it kind of goes into religious mythology with the mention of that it's believed that perhaps, you know, that this was the location of the Garden of Eden and the mention of the flaming sword. So very cool there and excellent write and very well done.
Thank you very much, Pam. That was a wonderful comment. And yeah, you're right about the religious aspect of it. That was good. Okay, so I have the next poem up, and it's by Amanda Liu, and it's called The Lily Bouquet. Her dark hair was pulled back in a chagrin, her dress snow white with antique lace. The aisle was littered with petals. She looked down towards the groom. In her hand, a bouquet of lilies, pink and white, merging with each other, spotted on the inside with dark freckles, the stems, a Kelly green, a symbol of love in her home country. Good luck to brides who carry them. She needed all the luck she could get. She sighed as she looked at the priest. The lily smelled of wonder and newness, all of the things she had hoped for, and all of the things she would now never have. She was dependent on the lilies now. She moved forward, crushing petal after petal. She stopped and turned, throwing the bouquet in the air. Well, that was beautifully descriptive and a powerful love story. But, you know, it's the lost love is palpable for sure, you know. But yeah, you know, it's a very sad story. What did you think, Pam?
It was definitely a sad story. And, you know, it's really difficult to tell, but I'm guessing that the groom must have died because of the line, she looked down toward the groom. I'm thinking she was looking at him in the casket. But I don't know for sure because it never really says for sure. But I think that's part of what makes this rite so intriguing is that you sense there is a sadness here. And yet you're not completely told what exactly it is. The other little details I like is the description of the woman herself. The fact that she uses Kelly green instead of just green. I like that she mentions that the lilies are a symbol of this, of love in the home country of the bride. And I think that's really important because so many times every flower, plant, tree has its own symbology in different countries and in different cultures, you know. And I think also what I also like about this is how the lilies smelled of wonder and newness. And there's this juxtaposition that really makes the melancholy tone of the rite stand out. And so beautifully written and very well done.
Excellent comment, Pam. Thank you very much. And you're up for reading, please, and thank you.
All right. My turn again already. Wow.
I'm going to check the studio.
All right. This is Silence is Golden, Duct Tape is Silver by Arbab. And it goes like this. Light travels faster than sound, making some people appear bright before they speak. Conventional wisdom's the key to winning most fights in life with the effect of a college graduate, but PhD-level skills required when dealing with peculiar and trying circumstances. Rob fertilized Eva's garden, and this was revealed to his wife, after which he vowed not to repeat. 3 weeks later, he again sowed his seed in Eva's treasure trove. The wife filed a general diary owing to which he had to make the jail his abode for the night. It had been 3 years, and there he had been no repeat of this adultery. Joanne trusted her kids with her money and other valuables as a married couple celebrating every golden jubilee years for 4 months in a row, 300 to 400 flew away accounted for, and she was crystal clear it had to be her kids, at least one of them. changing the combination code of her money wardrobe, and for the next 6 months, not a penny left its place. Alan had fallen faith in his students as God had over Jesus Christ, relaxed and carefree during exam and invigilations. For 2 months in a row, almost everyone secured A's and B's. He guarded the following exam like a parent tiger protecting her cubs. The percentage of A's and B's fell by 50 and 30% respectively. Joanne asked her kids to not be walls to her work. He hurled slings at her. She sprang like a mean cat and sealed his quivering lips. End poem.
That was an interesting storyline.
All
these different situations. You know, it opens with light travels faster than sound, making some people appear bright before they speak. You know, I thought that was great. And then, you know, conventional wisdom, the key to winning most fights in life with the effort of a college graduate, but PhD skill levels when dealing with particular and trying circumstances. And then it begins to take you on these trying circumstance journey. Powerful, right? You know, well-written and descriptive. What did you think, Pam?
Yeah, definitely descriptive. I got a little thrown off by Rob fertilized Eva's garden, but I have to say that was some clever use of imagery. I think there's a little bit of old-fashionedness in this because, you know, unfortunately nowadays adultery does not get you 3 years in jail. you know, so, but that's all right, you know. And it was a kind of an interesting lesson about, you know, how about not trusting people. And it was interesting too how, okay, I see that how it had that small part at the end. He hurled slang at her, and she sprang like a mean cat and sealed his quivering lips. Oh, yeah, that wouldn't be the first mother to spring like a mean cat when her son hurled slang at her. So just a really, yep, definitely a clever write and very well done.
Well said. Thank you, Pam. Great comment. Okay, I'm going to grab the next poem here. And this is Army Brat by Fantail. Memories of an Army Brat by Fantail. Memories of an Army Brat. I tripped over my childhood shoes of the rank and file, their laces tied in forget-me-nots of military life. As little tin soldiers woken by the rebel marched through my head, my mind, then stood to attention, saluting a convoy of memories, triggering sporadic thoughts of ear-piercing gunfire echoing from rifle ranges, startling shell-shocked birds into flight as tanks rumbled by on covert missions of deadly war games deep in the desert, while camouflaged by youthful innocence, we played hide-and-seek in the backyard. Yeah, the life of an Army brat is definitely a different one for sure. You know, she goes through all of her experiences as a Army brat and, you know, her life as a adult, how it's affected by it. And, you know, I tripped over my childhood shoes of the rank and file. Their laces tied in forget-me-nots of military life, you know, so it just keeps haunting her days. And I thought it was powerful, right? What did you think, Cam?
I really like this. I always admire Fantail's writing. And what I like about this is how she interweaves military terms to be, you know, to kind of connect with the idea of growing up and becoming her own person. As little tin soldiers woken by the marched through my mind and stood to attention, saluting a convoy of memories. I like how she brings us back into those memories and triggering sporadic thoughts of ear-piercing gunfire. It's almost like that whole idea that you see within these carefully crafted lines the idea of all that was good and all that was bad, or trying about being a kid who grew up in the army camps. So really just a really thoughtful, right, powerful imagery and metaphors. And I'm particularly struck deep in the desert while camouflaged by youthful innocence. Like the whole idea to me, those lines speak of not fully understanding what it was that was going on when a parent or family member was off serving in the military. So excellent, Reich, and very well done. Were you an army brat? Were you an army brat, Gray?
No, I wasn't. Our reserve. We had a half of our reserve taken by by the Canadian government for an army base, though. And supposed to give it back. They were supposed to give it back, and they didn't give it back. So the reserve started protesting, and
what the hell?
Yeah. It took somebody getting killed, and you know the reserve rioting, and that's what finally brought them to give it back after 50 years of having it overstayed. So.
You know, and it's such a shame that people have to riot for what is rightfully theirs. You know, it shouldn't have had to even reach that point. That is just sad and ridiculous. I'm sorry. But, have somebody online on the phone.
Okay, great. Let me just refresh. There we go. Hello, area code 703. Who's calling, please?
It's Tom.
Hey, Tom.
Somebody read my mind and pick me up.
Awesome. Welcome to the show, Tom. How are you doing?
I thought I'd stop by, at least for a little while.
Well, that's great. Appreciate you. So would you mind reading for us?
Oh, I'd be happy to.
That's great.
Is this a blueprint to a short story?
Yes.
Oh, by the writer C. Back to the dating site. Blueprint to a short story movie. Let me take you down this scary path. I know my critics will judge me and laugh. But there is something about being lonely, searching for your other half. I was in my feeling sleepless one night. A few hours later, I found myself back on the dating site. Username, good look, 33. Status, single and free. I didn't care about the color of skin, looking for love or special friend. I thought I found my match in Michelle. She loves to jet ski and sail, so I checked her BCC. She had a misdemeanor and a felony 3. My hopes were up too high because half of the profiles are created with a scam or a lie. I wish I'd stopped when I had a chance, but I was a sucker for fairy tale romance. I had to see if this is real. We're past phone conversations. Tonight I'll finally meet Jill. Feeling good, looking my best, I put 5620 in my GPS. My feelings slowly turned into a movie scene with mystery and suspense. Sitting at the location, staring at an empty lot and a fence. I went home and pressed delete because this dating site had me at the agony of defeat. End poem.
Wonderful read, Tom. And fascinating story, you know, like the subject of the dating life and dating apps and dating sites and all of this, and finally getting to meet somebody and then they don't show up. You know, there's definitely a few minor kinks in the world's dating game today, and I thought it was fantastically written and wonderfully read as well. Thomas, what did you think, Pam?
Oh, this was definitely a clever and fun write. I tell you, though, if you're going to make your username goodlook33, you better be good-looking and age 33, or good-looking and born in 1933. I'm curious what a 5620 is that you put in a GPS, but I do like how this has that humor, but also that kind of sense of optimism up until that last line, that because this dating site had me in the agony of defeat. So excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. That was a great comment. And Thomas, what did you think?
Well, you know, in dealing in virtual reality, one must remember the word virtual means almost but not quite true. And he does an excellent job of showing how much of romance is our own creation. And whether it's on a dating site or someone you meet at the bar or the person who seems so perfect at the church picnic, the person who's making it all up isn't them, it's you. And if someone plays with that, then yes, you do feel the fool, but foolish most of all because you let yourself get caught up in your own BS. And that's what creates half the mess, I think. I think the 5610 in my GPS, the beginning of the address. But I like how he set it up because he does a really nice, sharp job of demonstrating how much we keep thinking we're going to find the perfect one somewhere, and they keep having flaws. Like the first person he talked about had a misdemeanor, a felony 3. So, you know, it's really good to keep looking, but it might be wise not to get your hopes too high before you get something definite in place.
Absolutely. Yeah, that was a deep comment, Tom. Thank you. Appreciate it. Okay, so this next write is by Just Popping. It's called Little Sister, A Butterfly Flapped Its Wings. I enter my room and find my sister playing with my favorite doll. She's always messing with my stuff, and today I finally had enough. I yelled, "I hate you!" And she began to cry. All I could do was look down in shame and ask myself, why? Why had I said such a horrible thing, knowing all the pain it would bring? I was filled with sorrow and regret. Those angry words my little sister would never forget. Little sister, I did not mean what I said. Tomorrow when I get out of bed, I'm going to put on my shoes backwards so that I travel to the past with each step I take till I reach that moment in time and correct my awful mistake. I enter my room and find my little sister playing with my favorite doll. She looks up expecting me to be mad, but I am so glad that I have been given a second chance to make things right. Little sister, that doll has brought me such joy. I know how much you like it, so I want you to have my favorite toy. I sit next to her on the rug, and she gives me a big hug. Seeing the happiness in her eyes, now it's my turn to cry. There is one more important thing I need to do, I tell my sister. I love you. End poem. Well, that was beautiful. You know, if we could only have that chance of, you know, we'll wake up, put our shoes on backwards and walk into the future and change what we've done before. I thought it's just a beautiful expression of a butterfly flap. well done. Excellent, right? What did you think, Pam?
I have to say, I agree with you, Gray, that if only we could actually go back. But then it kind of brings up that whole almost like philosophical thought of if we went back to change those little things, those little moments, how many big moments would we end up changing, you know? And the fact that, and it reminds us also that because we can't do those kind of things, that to really watch our words, you know, especially around children. But I think there's a kind of a heartfelt innocence to this rite and the idea of a young girl who puts her shoes on backwards and gets to go back in time and have that moment again and make things right. So just a beautifully written and very well done.
Great comment. Thank you, Pam. And Thomas, what did you think?
No, first, well said, Pam. I agree 100%. Because I think once we've lost someone we love and suddenly realize we didn't get a chance to say all the things we wanted to tell them. For instance, I have a brother who was actually, after my mother died, mad at me because he found out that I had taken the opportunity to let her know how much I loved her when I knew she had cancer and I knew, you know, that she was going to die in the end. And he hadn't. And so for part of his grief process was getting over being angry at me for doing something he wished she had done. So I like the way this poet captures us for a second, first by the pain that's created and then in the regret having a chance to correct it. Because I think it heightens our sensitivity to how much of a difference we make in the lives of those we love and who love us in turn, the ones who look up to us, the ones who are innocent and unable to protect themselves from other people's callousness, rudeness, or sometimes just not thinking in the moment of how much damage they're doing. Because they're too much caught up in their own stuff. She catches a whole lot of here, and she does it in a really graceful and sensitive fashion. So in creating a positive and lovely poem, she's able to step past a lot of cliche and strike to the heart of it. I think it's a beautiful job.
Great comment. Thank you, Tom. I appreciate that. And Pam, you're up next to read, please.
All right. This is Twilled the Urban in the Rural by Stephen N.Y. And it goes like this. I asked myself, do the city and the mountain mix? Thinking about it, I slowed as an antique shop. As a child, skyscraper our horizon through her second story window, I was constantly and casually threatened with a polenta stick by my grandmother, even though her kindness would never hit. What seems like at 8, I used to carry 4-liter jugs of wine, Carlo Rossi labels, on cracked cement to a damp basement. I fumbled once, leaving the skin on my knees and palms on the sidewalk just before our home. The street and teeth of the sewer cap at least met the taste of burgundy. In autumns, I smelled the carcass of deer butchered on the basement table only a few feet from my room. It added chill to an already cold, the smell of death, and a Mets baseball pennant, blue and orange, became my eyes and nose like a mirror to my face. I took the car ride with Father to the outskirts of the airport to check his rabbit traps, then tricked to eat the damn things days later. There was no question that I could hunt, take the kick off a .30-06, pull the trigger to a 12-gauge, or hose the dirt after mushroom hunts, all while burgeoning in teenager New York City rage. And I never wore gloves when I gardened, landscaped, or planted trees. I learned the value of a pickaxe, lessons that blister a caustic leaf here or there across the skin were always a sign of health. And besides, only Americani wore gloves. As an adult, I had a friend say women loved his soft hands. I never understood that. There were other things, many other things. I came to understand that the city was missing pines, and the panorama of the perfume of wood was replaced by a wall of exhaust, that slopes and hills could be thread with American hope, and an empire of masonry in its own way rewarded the eyes with a spectacular film. I understood that the urban and rural could be twilled. End poem.
Great read, Pam, and a fascinating, right, you know, storyline of somebody who's living rural but also urban at the same time as a teenager. I thought it was wonderfully expressed and a deep, powerful poem of a storyline of his life. What did you think, Pam?
Can I digest and Tom comment?
Okay, sure.
Oh.
Tom?
I think this is lovely. It's a great combination of the childhood, as he says, memories of growing up first generation in New York City and raised by family from Trentino, Italy. And you can hear so much about the family and their history and their roots in agriculture and taking care of things and people. And at the same time, some of his own, perhaps we could call it anger, like at the changes, you know, the no question that I would hunt, take the kick of a 30-06 and pull the trigger of a 12-gauge or hose the dirt away from mushroom hunts, all while burgeoning in teenager New York City rage. But at the other time, there's things like his statements about the things he learned from his father and about the idea that you should work hard. You know, I never wore gloves when I gardened. Landscapes are planted trees. I learned the value of a pickaxe and lessons that blisters are caustic leaf here and there. I mean, it shows the contrast between the city life and the country life, the agrarian life. But it also shows in many ways how important family is and the things that family teach you are to your own sense of self and your own sense of values, and that you can mix a whole lot of different things. And as long as the family's there, you survive. Because you get that last stanza, I came to understand that the city was missing pines and the panorama of the perfume of wood was replaced by a wall of exhaust. The slopes and hills could be a thread with American hopes, and an empire of masonry in its own way reward the eyes with a spectacular film. I really like the way he makes this and the way he got to sort of the heart of the matter by hitting you with all these visual images from the polenta stick by my grandmother, even though her kindness could never hit, all the way down to the guns and the hunting. It was a really striking and sharp and beautiful piece of work.
Well said. Thank you, Tom. I agree wholeheartedly. Okay, I have the next poem up. It's by Bartley Bach, and I have a SoundCloud.
Scarecrow on Brawny Down. A vow to guard our fields in autumn crown. Puffs of woodland smoke, the season vinified, and murder mocking crows on Brawny Down. clogs of claggy fog soak his scrawny gown. A princely pauper's paunch of stolen rye, poker face, and beady-eyed in autumn crown. Here his whimper ply, with stubbly hat and frown, stuffy head on rusty fork, all mummified, stoke and shock God's warbler on brawny down. Goblin, but a farmer's curse now, tumble down. Corn in gumboot, onion, parsley ossified. Needle teeth and bones of straw in autumn crown. The poacher's game, the armoured knight, disown him. Stalking skins and feather mortified. Raptor, sticks and pumpkin stones that gawk on brawny down. A ruddy meadow flourishes at sundown, rounds of crimson fruit and talk of damselfly. A vow to guard our fields in autumn crown and murder mocking crows on brawny down.
Well, that was a fabulous read. Excellent recording. And, you know, I thought he brought the storyline to life, this scene of the scarecrow in the field and all his work in his day. And I really thought it was beautifully written and read as well. Fantastic job. What did you think, Pam?
Yeah, that definitely was beautifully read. He just really has a nice reading voice. I like that he did this in the villanelle form and did it with a comprehensive storyline, which I think takes some talent and a kind of an idea of focusing on the balance between the repetitive line and the imagery chosen. I like how this is a dark, haunting tale that brings us kind of into the idea of the myths and legends of scarecrows and guardians. I like hear his whimper ply with stubby head and frown, stuffy head on rusted fork, all mummified, stroke and shock God's warbler on brown dawn. Really great lines there, and beautifully written and very well done.
Absolutely. Thank you, Pam. That was a wonderful comment. And Thomas, what did you think?
This is one of those poems where the description is so articulate and so sharp that you find yourself almost transported from where you sit to this vision of the scarecrow, the field, and the effect he has, the scarecrow, on the surroundings just by the way he appears, both to the reader, to the poet, and to the people that he causes to inhabit his work, like the poacher's game, the armored knight disown him, stalking skins and feather mortified, or goblin for a farmer's curse now tumble down, corn and gumboot, onion, parsley, ossified. I mean, the imagery along with the language just causes you to stop and sort of let it soak into your skin, sort of become a garden in your imagination. This is an extremely strong and vibrant piece and a beautiful work of art.
Well said, stunning comment, Thomas. Thank you. And would you mind reading the next one for me, Thomas?
No problem. Is this the Robert Pulaski? Yeah, there we go.
Yeah.
I Am Spring by Robert Pulaski. I am the spirit lifting sun rays, gently flowing breeze, warming up your hair. Aroma hovering over parsley green meadow, carnival of scents blowing in the air, nature's defibrillator, jump-starting life into the land. I am dawn's moon's sheen over malachite green grass, grandeur of purple crocuses, glowing with royal pride, shoals of honeysuckle, primroses and bluebells, swaying and weaving a rich mosaic, cauterizing, gaping wounds, winter left behind. I am the jewel, green grasshoppers, bouncing atop the grass like leggy trampolines, thump, clump, bumblebees, looting from honey pots of mustard yellow flowers, proud-breasted pigeons strutting through the horde of sun-faced dandelions grinning at the greens. I am honking geese, whooping swans, with winter exodus of banished birds flowing out of Celtic fairy tale, murmuration of starlings wheeling and banking overhead like wind-tossed gunpowder. Calves braying for company, lowing in the mead, yipping fox clubs, breaking the quiet of the world. I am spring. Bring peace to Mother Earth. Love what I do. End poem.
That was a beautiful read, Thomas. You know, you have a real... a natural reading voice for poems, just beautiful. But I really love the storyline of this, you know, the journey of spring and its deeds along the way and what it is. And, you know, it is everything that's surrounding you. And, you know, it's breathing life into a withered world in winter. I thought it was just beautifully expressed. What did you think, Pam?
Well, first of all, Tom is just absolutely a natural performer. I tell you, if you ever want to guarantee to have a caller on your show, what you do is tell Tom that you have a poem that will only do in his voice.
And yeah.
But I absolutely think this is wonderful personification of spring. I like the repetitiveness of the I am, and just great imagery. I like I am the jewel green grasshopper bouncing atop the grass like leggy trampolines, thumb bumblebees. I like that he reminds us that there is so much joy to be found, so much life and vibrancy to be found in the welcoming of spring. So really just an excellent write and very well done.
Excellent comment. Thank you, Pam. And Thomas, what did you think of the write that you read?
It was a beautiful read. The imagery just jaw-dropping at times. I mean, I love I Am Dawn's Moon's bright sheen over malachite green grass. The grandeur of purple crocuses glowing with royal pride, shoals. I love that term, shoals of honeysuckle. You can just see them suddenly becoming like an incredible wave across the field. Primroses and bluebells swaying and weaving. The whole poem does this. It just, he from that down right down to the flowing of Celtic fairy tale, murmuration, starlings. The descriptions are so rich and so vibrant that you almost feel like you've been stolen into somebody's beautifully painted canvas and just given the opportunity to experiencing the pure artistry of spring. Beautifully, beautifully done.
Well said. Thank you, Thomas. I appreciate that. Okay, I've been next pulling up. This
Lee, I'll be right back. I got to get something for my throat.
Okay. Look in a minute. This is by David Meyerhoff, and it's called The Last Mistake. Error calls out to serve bitter lessons. My haste to learn invites many aches to slow me down and slow chew the plush morsels, bulldozing past to growth. The world full of teachers to force feed the lesson plan in hand, a sharp ruler to slap the wrist when I get out of line. Discipline and labor, the agents of scholastics, served up on the silver platter of nature with ample bandage supply, patching the wounds of advanced study. I like that. You know, it was a journey through the education system and, you know, world full of teachers to force feed the lessons plan in hand, a sharp ruler to slap the wrist when I get out of line. I mean, you know, I've had my share of lessons from a teacher, for sure, and the hard kind. But fabulous, right? What did you think, Pam?
I really liked this. That was a wonderful brevity. I like that it's how we often learn from making mistakes, but sometimes we just find ourselves being in the position of making the same mistakes over and over again, of running ourselves into the same walls over and over again. And I like how there's a kind of a bit of humor in this. My haste to learn invites many aches to slow me down. The world full of teachers to force feed the lessons plan in hand, a sharp ruler to slap the wrist. It takes us, and what I like too about this is that it takes us beyond learning in the classroom to learning out in the world, to learning by just doing and trying, you know. So really just a clever write and very well done.
Absolutely. Thank you, Pam. And Thomas, are you back?
Yeah, I'm back.
Did you get a chance to hear the poem?
I totally missed. I had to run around. Okay. Get some tea and get a cough drop.
Right. Okay, thanks, Thomas. Okay, Pam, you're up next, please.
All right, this is Stepping Stones by Fran Marie, and it goes like this. My love, I've only a mere pittance to offer you, just a swirl of dreamlike words conjured up from the magical playground of my mind. Perhaps I imagine you standing on a pedestal of grand measure as I shower you with glittering gold and luxurious gifts and carved in intricate detail. Would that I could give all this and more, paintings of Zen gardens and sunlit meadows, azure skies, smiling, and green peacock feathers. But I am not an artist of such flair, nor a builder of pedestals so grand, nor have I the nightest touch of these treasures to bestow. No, oh no, I am but a poet with a pittance of mere words to offer from my heart, and use them as stepping stones, hoping they find their way into yours. End poem.
Well, beautiful read. And then a beautiful poem. You know, you can feel the love that she has for this person, putting them on a pedestal and showering them in gold and in intricately carved gifts. I thought it was just a beautiful, touching poem filled with love and admiration from a poet. You know, their gift is their word. So I thought it was just beautiful. What did you think, Thomas?
Well, I like the humbleness, the sense of artistry but at the same time, a feeling of not of, of for all my artistry, for sort of like for all my artistry, for all the things that I can create, I feel there's nothing I can do that creates anything as beautiful as the gift that you are to me. And all the things I would give you can't measure up to the way you have touched me. And that's a very powerful thing to be able to do, especially when she conjures up such a wonderful vision, right down to paintings of Zen gardens and sunlit meadows, azure skies, smiling in green peacock feathers. This is really touching, and there's a gentle tenderness to it that I find quite enchanting.
I agree. Thank you, Thomas. Excellent comment. And Pam, what did you think of the poem that you read?
Yeah, I thought this was really beautiful. And I have to agree, it does have that kind of, that feel to it of that nothing you offer up is more beautiful than love itself. And I too like how it was very humble. I like how she says, just a swirl of dream-like words conjured up from the magical playground of my mind. I think that's just really a nice touch to refer to the mind as a magical playground. And I like how she spaces her writing and makes the stanzas different, lengths and kind of have a movement to them. I think that adds to the appeal of the poem, especially as they seem to get further and further apart. It almost kind of flows like the river in the picture, the stream in the picture that's with it. And I really like that she says, I am but a poet with a pittance of mere words to offer. I think that was wonderful use of the word pittance, and very well done.
Well said. Thank you, Pam. Okay, Thomas, you're up, please.
Okay. All right. And we have Teasing Avalon 81 by Soliloquy. It's a shame how I rip up innocent flowers by their dainty roots, plucking the petals of faked flora, only to appease my faint-hearted insecurities. She loves me. She loves me not. Yet, how is a flower to know the wiles of a woman's repute? Or the time it takes to build up the courage to articulate said intentions. I have killed many a poinsettia in my quest for love and buried them shallow in my garden of voiceless disappointments. End poem.
Are you on mute, Grace?
Yes, I was. Thank you, Pam. Yep. But no, that was a wonderful read, and a fascinating poem. You know, it takes us all back to that picking flowers, you know, petals off of flowers in the, quest to seek the answer to does she love me or not. You know, I remember doing this as a child, and I thought it was just a fascinating trip down memory lane to being that kid pulling those flower petals off and feeling the guilt of destroying a flower in my quest to find out the answers of love. And I thought it was just a wonderful write. What did you think, Ken?
I really like this, and it does kind of have that feel of bringing you back in memory to those times. And, of course, I don't know about you, but we didn't do it with expensive flowers like poinsettias. We tend to do it with, like, daisies. But what I think, the poinsettias was a nice touch going with a more expensive, not as easily available flower except for during the holidays, because I think this, what it does is it takes a childhood-like thought and brings it into adulthood to where the whole idea of who and what are we willing to damage to just try to find some security in a relationship. And if we can't, and are we turning to the wrong? And I think a lot of times it's I think this also focuses on the whole idea of using the plucking of the flowers and the asking of the question, she loves me, she loves me not, is the idea of going to the wrong people for advice. Because if you're in a relationship with someone and you're not sure, you know, how things are going or what needs to be done to improve things, or, you know, it shouldn't be other people you're necessarily going to for advice, but rather the person themselves. So I think it's a really thoughtful, layered right, and very well done.
Well said. Thank you, Pam. And Thomas, what did you think of the poem that you read?
I agree with what Pam had to say completely. But I like how he does the whole thing about, you know, plucking the flower. But right after the first verse, it's only to appease my faint-hearted insecurities. You know, this sense of I need to go to some kind of sort of magical superstition so that I can get answers to things that I can't find out for myself because I'm too insecure. She loves me, she loves me not, you know. And yes, and, you know, and he says, how is a flower to know? Or the time it takes to build up the courage to articulate said attention. I just like the little phrases, like, and bury them shallow. Like, just to do this somehow makes me appear shallow, makes me look like a coward, you know. And as long as I continue to do this, it's going to be in my garden of voiceless disappointment. It's almost like, you know, the whole thing is a very careful chiding that if you want it, you have to have the bravery to go out and get it. Not depend on something to say that it's already there and it's all safe and you don't have to do anything. I thought this was very, very clever and very subtle in the way that he produced the entire imagery in the poem. And that makes it all the more delightful to read and to take in.
Yeah, exactly. Well said. Thank you, Thomas. Okay, the next write-up, this is by Gabby A. West, and it's called To Freedom. I am born captive. My scenery is a huge wall between me and my freedom. It is a shackle on my ankle, my only companion, day and night. One night I tell myself, it's enough. I need to escape. I want to see behind the wall, to smell the fragrance of flowers, to inhale the fresh air without fear for my life. I climb the solid brick, lacerate my skin, but I ignore the pain. One thing I know, I am running on the railway tracks with tears in my eyes, and I am free at last. End poem. You know, we're all kind of born caged and walled in by, you know, life and its situational circumstances, and, you know, breaking free of that is not the easiest thing to do. And so if you're able to, don't turn around, you know, just keep running, because you'll get to where you need to be eventually. What did you think, Dan?
Well, this is one of those rites that just kind of balances itself somewhere between fantasy and reality. It has almost a fairy tale-like feel to it, like the idea of Rapunzel and many other you know, fairy tale characters that are held in prison, but and yet, you know, it works on a metaphorical level too, as you were mentioning, how we all feel at times imprisoned and the need for freedom. But it also has a sad touch of reality to it, in that it makes me think of things like human trafficking and horrific things like that, where there are actually places, you know, and people who are being held prisoner against their will. It definitely just is a kind of haunting and thoughtful rite, very well done.
Thank you, Pam. That was a great comment. And Thomas, what did you think?
I like the way she sets up her lines, because something as simple as between me and my freedom could be my scenery is a huge wall between me and my freedom, or between me and my freedom is a shackle on my ankle, my only companion, day and night. There's just a nice use of enjambment in this poem. And sometimes the technique is so, it's handled so well that it deserves a compliment. And she does a great job of where she sets up her line breaks and how she handles the phrasing in here. I agree with a lot of what Pam said, because it has that sort of double feeling of being both a description of an actual state and escaping it, and a tremendous extended metaphor speaking to the entire idea that as long as we're caught in our fears, as long as we are held back by our own doubts and beliefs about the impossibility of things, we are our own jailers, and that we almost have to ignore the fear, ignore the pain, and burst free just so that we can breathe for the first time from the way we cage ourselves. In either case, it's a really nicely done piece with really sharp phrases that capture the reader while you're hearing it. So very well done.
Well said. Thank you, Thomas. And okay, so I have the next poem up, and it has a SoundCloud.
Chatting with the Mirror by Diane D. Mirror, mirror on the wall, I stopped to hear your beck and call. You asked me for a nip of time, I flipped the light to see you shine. Silver sunbeams lit the room, there seemed to be a peppy tune. I smiled loud, you smiled back, I said to me I need a snack. Just a minute, stammered you, there's things to say and things to do. Don't you stand there looking smirky, I said to me I need some turkey. And when you stand there in the buff, you said to me I've had enough. Go grab a towel and cover up, cause when you leave I see your butt. I hear your burps, I hear your tinkles, and on your face I count your wrinkles. And one more thing I must bequeath, don't look at me without your teeth. I said to you, now don't be rude, I've seen you too when you've been nude. And who are you, you're just a glass, and when you turn I see your... But really now, you said in kind, I've had a thought, I've changed my mind. So if you want to strip in peace, then that's okay, it's fine with me. I raised my head and said to you, and if I want, I'll even poo. A toothless grin, I couldn't care, cause when I blink, you disappear. End poem.
That was wonderful. I really liked it. That mirror experience is quite a journey, and she took us on that journey quite expressively, and I just thought it was fantastically produced and a wonderful write with the music in the background. Just a fantastic SoundCloud and experience altogether. You can see all this as it happens. Silver sunbeams lit the room. There seemed to be a peppy tune. I smiled loud. You smiled back. I said to me, I need a snack. Just a minute, you stammered, you. There's things to say and things to do. Don't just stand there looking smirky. I said to me, I need some turkey. this is a crazy trip between before the mirror, but it was beautifully done. What did you think, Pam?
Oh, my goodness. I thought this was so much fun. I had to laugh out loud. It was great humor. I like how it takes the classic, magic mirror that you're talking to, and it gives it a smart-ass attitude. I hear your burps. I hear your tinkles, and on your face, I count your wrinkles. And one more thing I must bequeath, don't look at me without your teeth. Oh, my gosh. This whole thing was great. Excellent write, and very well done.
Absolutely. Thank you, Pam. And Thomas, what did you think?
I like how she gets the conversation moving because it starts off with she's so self-absorbed. Even when the mirror talks to her, she's still thinking about her snack. I need a snack. I need some turkey. And the mirror goes off on her, and when she starts running back, the conversation starts moving so fast that for a second there, I was not too sure who was talking to who, which I liked because that enhanced the sense of magic and the sense of somehow we disappear into our own reflections in so many ways. And yet at the same time, at the very end, there's kind of a stark honesty that, you know, I am who I am. I'm going to do what I want. And it doesn't really matter how I look to you because I can make you disappear. and that's just really, there's just a really sharp sense of awareness, waking up to one's own self. So it's both an argument with the mirror and an internal argument. And I just really like the way she pulls that off. It takes a lot of skill to use conversation that sharply and that immediate, because the poem feels very immediate. So while it had me laughing on one hand, it had me really thinking on the other. Very, very well done.
Well said. Yeah, I agree. Thank you, Thomas. Okay, Pam, I've got the next poem up if you wouldn't mind, please.
I would be happy to. This is Fathoms by Gottlieb, and it goes like this. A sea of glass and a mottled moon, a deep sea mystery where inky depths write lunar truths in endless litany of life that teems in fluent dreams of shadows, entities, perhaps of friends that coexist, perhaps of enemies. It's cosmic drama playing out in phantoms beneath the shore, cycles of orderly evolution man is powerless to explore. Beneath the calm, the prey, the predator, circle an infinite sphere, a sea of glass where a mottled moon can only shadow this abysmal frontier. End poem.
Wonderful, wonderful read, Pam. Thank you. And, you know, this is a deep, dark poem. You know, it speaks to the abyss of the underwater life and the journey that it's on. And I thought it was quite explicitly done. You know, her rhyme is fantastic and the flow is great. Just a beautiful write. What did you think, Thomas?
I like how he starts off a sea of glass and mottled moon, a deep sea mystery where inky depth writing lunar truths and endless litany. It's like the thoughts of the dreamer, the thoughts of the philosopher, perhaps just someone caught in a moment where they're really sort of seeing how much they don't know, how much they're caught in just their own fears and confusion, and that there's so much of life that is a wonder, a miracle, magic, that we don't have answers for and we don't have explanations of and we don't really understand. And perhaps we don't really see our role, our true purpose in this wonder that is about us. I mean, she really hits it when she goes in fathoms beneath the shore, cycles of orderly evolution, man is powerless to explore, beneath the calm, the prey, the predator, circle in an infinite sphere. I mean, she catches this this sense that I always loved, that perhaps we're not as important as we like to make out, and perhaps we're more at the effect of things than we'd like to admit. And she captures all that and just in a beautiful spare piece of brevity, where she plays with the moon, she plays with the night skies, but most of all, she preys upon our own doubts and ignorance. And I just beautifully done.
Well said. That was a wonderful comment. Thank you, Thomas. Actually, would you mind reading the next one for me, Thomas, please?
Yeah, no problem. Let me go back to where everything's hidden. Okay. National Native American Month by Ruth M. March. National Native American Month. Sitting Bull, great negotiator. Crazy Horse, great warrior. Greasy Grass, great wind. End poem.
Beautiful read, Thomas. You know, and this is dedicated to all the different situations with the Native Americans. You know, Sitting Bull had his time in front of the treaty, and you know, Crazy Horse was a great warrior, and Greasy Grass speaks to the Battle of Little Bighorn, and I thought it was you know, a wonderful write. What did you think, Pam?
I have to say, I like what she's done with the brevity. You know, and this would be one of those type of rates where it'd be difficult for me to hold back, because you know that there's so much out there to research, and so many different Native Americans throughout history who deserve to have a nod towards them. But the fact that she did it in a few lines by mentioning, you know, a couple of well-known ones, and I personally had to Google Greasy Grass, which I say kudos to that, because if you can put something in a short poem that I have to look up and gives me an opportunity to learn, I always appreciate that. And I do like and appreciate that she has written something and given a nod towards National Native American Month. So excellent write and very well done.
That was a great comment. Thank you, Pam. And what did you think of the poem that you read, Thomas?
Well, first there was a Native American educator speaker who I listened to once who was pointing out, he said, you know, he talked about Geronimo and Sitting Bull and Crazy Horse and the things they'd won and the wisdom and intelligence they'd shown. And he said, but they won battles. The wave of settlers and Europeans coming across the American plains was so great that we couldn't see how they were the tidal wave that was going to take it all away from us because they were going to win the war. And in the way this sort of reflects that, because it's National Native American Month, and that's the war. Sitting Bull, a great negotiator. Crazy Horse, a great warrior. Greasy Grass, great wind. Those are all battles. Those are all moments. So for me, there's a great deal of sadness in these quick four lines.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. Thank you, Thomas. Okay, I have the next one up. This is by Leith Van Amsterdam, and it's called Heartbreaker. I knew it the second I saw her. She didn't have to do a thing. She was just what I deserved, standing there, waiting. I was lost for words at first. What could I possibly say or do? Sure, it was based upon appearance, but to me, this girl had little to prove. Wearing headphones to avoid noise, a band t-shirt of which I could dig, that tight-fitting blue denim skirt. Man, this girl was my everything. Time stopped at this very moment. It was an hour-never type deal. I was still kind of slow to react, but damn, the way she made me feel. I finally mustered up the courage and hoped she was into men. Then the train left the station, and I never saw her again. End poem. You know, when you finally step up and the train whisks her away, that's got to suck. But no, this was beautifully written, and it's definitely a brevity for Leif Van Andersam, Amsterdam, and because normally his rights are a lot longer and less lighthearted. But, you know, you can feel the empathy for somebody who's been in this situation. And I'd just like to congratulate him on his new book called Moral in a Bottle, The Best of Leif Van Amsterdam. So check that out. And, yeah, what did you think, Pam?
I think, Gray, you're a heartbreaker, dream maker, love taker. Don't you mess around with me. I'm sorry. I have Pat Benatar in my head now, and she'll be there for the rest of the night. But no,
right.
I like Leif's writing, and I like how there's this really just great, emotive, straightforward language. Like, it's not flowery. It's all about the real and the everyday, the tight-fitting blue denim skirt, the wearing of the headphones, a band T-shirt, you know, those little details that you remember about somebody. And there's just a kind of a sense of, you know, sadness with, I finally mustered up the courage and hoped she was into men. Then the train left the station and I never saw her again. So it's heartbreaking, but at the same time, it also has that, like, nice wrap-up with a sense of humor to it. And it's really relatable to the idea of sometimes we make our moves a little too late. And so excellent write and very well done.
Great comment. Thank you, Pam. And Thomas, what did you think?
Well, I'm going to say what I think, but it's going to be sound like I stole it all from Pam, you know. There's a line I've heard it so many times that I had to laugh when we got to the last stanza. Is you somebody look at you and you're getting your courage up, or you're trying to figure out how you're going to deliver the line, how you're going to break the ice. You can say it a thousand different ways, and somebody will look at you and go, "You better get moving because the train's going to leave the station." And I just thought this was nicely set up because he did the description and he talked about how, you know, he really wanted to do something, and but that I finally mustered up the courage and hoped she was in the men, but the train left the station because I took too long. I never saw her again. I mean, you know, to me it's funny. It's sort of like a very poetic version of you know, kind of a standard adage to everybody who's trying to get up the courage to ask that girl.
Yeah. Wonderful comment. Thank you, Thomas. Okay, your rate's up next, Thomas, if you wouldn't mind, please.
Okay. Short little one. The moment answers. The door stood open. You could feel the porch boards creak. Dog stirred and laid back down. The wind held your chin, but you wanted to see. The breezes stirred your fingers. You sent message rapidly, knowing I would go on feeling anything my senses understood. Hands were flying. Heart fluttered. The hand formed to the chin. Memories that weren't made yet became conscious. Whispers stirred around your collar, burning your ears. I could only move slowly. The feelings running so fast. I feared for my sense of balance. Questions seek answers. Sometimes we prefer pretending we have them already. We are met in this space, held by the weight of the world, only wanting to hold each other. in poem.
Well, you know, that's a deep poem of love and, you know, the fear of loss in there. And it's just a beautiful, right, full of grace and, you know, it dances the way through. Just a beautiful write, Thomas. Fabulous read.
Oh, thank you.
What did you think, Pam? Yeah, you bet.
Oh, I think this is just absolutely wonderful. I think one of the great things about having a show that, you know, allows for pre-writes is you get to have gems like these brought forth. And I really like how it starts with the door stood open. You could feel the porch board creak. I feel like creaking porch boards kind of set a tone, a melancholy tone to them. Hands were flying, heart fluttered, the hand formed to the chin, memories that weren't made became conscious. All of a sudden, that kind of, as if your surroundings make you suddenly aware of something, of someone that's been like deep in the back of your mind, held by the weight of the world, only wanting to hold each other. Really just such a strong sense of longing in this. It's a beautiful, heartfelt write. And very well done.
Well said. Thank you. Thank you, Pam. Beautiful comment. And so I've got the next poem up. This is by Frank, or Poetic Picasso, and he has a SoundCloud, so I will play that.
A myriad of impregnated screens rack my little brain, penetrating through my impenetrable walls, a colossal leviathan with the force of a sonomic rage. 2,000 demons busting through the walls of my fate insanity, releasing the Medusan tremors of the collapsing earth in the blood-sucking leeches of ravenous vampires, conjured in the fiery dungeon of my piercing pain. A psychedelic odyssey, psychotic madness, shackled fears, molten hot lover, quondam delusions, quasi dreams, tattered pieces, a fountain of blood. Disturbing soliloquies, perilous thoughts, a destined solitude, a harrowing zenith, a diluted pleasure dome, a destructive threshold, a coiling double helix, the winding paths of horror. I am an exiled man chained to a heavy rock on a lone mountain peak, a wretched beast to himself, reduced to the memories of his forsaken love. Before the bloodbath of the scavenging ravens, in mercy of my tormentor who deemed me a prisoner of my harsh punishment, I have been fully stripped of my bloody garments, leaving my body naked to the undeniable truth in unbearable suffering. I am a condemned man, the face of the beast that I fear and loathe. In my love for her, it's forever my eternal condemnation. I am tormented every day by the haunting shadow of the beautiful woman who was once my bride. Am I bloody insane? Oh, am I bloody insane? End of poem.
Wow, that was fantastic, wonderful read, excellent write. You know, I thought it was just a beautiful job. You know, taking you on this journey of madness, and you know, being lost in this love of the haunting shadow. Just tragic and deep, dark, right? What did you think, Pam?
I really enjoyed this one. As always, you know, you did a wonderful read, really adding the drama to it. On a technical level, there's just really some great alliteration within this. But what I particularly find appealing about this write is that while it has visceral and gorish imagery, like as such as before the bloodbath of the scavenging rangers, ravens, and mercy of my tormentor who gave me a prisoner, there's also a psychological aspect to the horror. You know, the whole idea of being trapped somewhere and slowly going into a descent of madness. So just really an excellent write and very well done.
Well said. Thank you, Pam. I'm just laughing at the boar in LNP. So Pam is a biter. Wink-a-dink.
Hey, well, that cracks me up.
Yeah. Thomas, what did you think?
Well, it brings up the question, is this the cries of someone who is unbelievably mad and who had a chance at love and the love walked out on him because he couldn't hold it together, or is this someone who was so deeply and totally enraptured that at the loss of the woman he loved, whether through death or through her leaving, fell into complete madness, or is this one of those dark, magical weddings of two forces of evil? And when she finally separates from him in the course of all these events, all the horrors of madness and evilness come to attack. I mean, I love a psychedelic odyssey, psychotic madness, shattered fears, molten hot lava, or the disturbing soliloquy, perilous thoughts, the destined solitude. He really catches a whole lot of this sense of being thoroughly at a loss of how to deal with and being completely destroyed by. And it really sharpens it when he goes, I am a condemned man, the face of the beast that I fear and loathe, and my love for her is forever my eternal condemnation. And to end with that question and that great maniacal laugh, this makes this a beautifully dark and perilous journey through the mind of someone who may not be completely tethered to reality.
Yeah, absolutely. Great comment. Thank you, Frank. I mean, thank you, Thomas. Excellent job, Frank.
Thanks.
Pam, would you mind reading for Daniel DeShano?
I would be happy to. This is Lover's Song by Daniel DeShano, and it goes like this. What words may capture two hearts embraced and bring to light each tender kiss, a daunting task with which I'm faced to bring to you a lover's bliss, a touch that heals my every pain, a hug to bring me through the night, a smile to turn the snow to rain, eyes that spark my love ignites. Mere words that tale in true love's glow, for each love unique and each its own, a love for her and I to know, as our captured hearts are ours alone. End poem.
Beautiful read, Pam. And, you know, this is a touching poem full of love and, you know, the journey of that love and, a love for her and I to know, as our captured hearts are ours alone. Even though you're captured, you're still alone with that person. So I thought it was just a beautifully written poem. What did you think, Thomas?
Well, I like that he does this in three, four-line verses. Starts with the question, what words may capture two hearts embraced? And that whole stanza is this question. And then he answers it by creating a reflection of the gift that it all is, and the way that when the two of them come together, it becomes unique and magical for just the two of them, as our captured hearts are ours alone. It's a very stunning and very deep and thoughtful piece, done with a great sense of this is something not to be drawn out, but to be sharply presented so that each one can wonder at it themselves. Really well done.
Beautiful comment. Thank you, Thomas. And Pam, what did you think of the poem that you read?
I thought this just, first of all, flowed beautifully. And I like how there's this kind of idea, this sense of unselfishness, of wanting to bring joy and pleasure and ignite that spark in your loved one. And I like how it's about the kiss and about the glow of love, but it's about also how he says, a love for her and I to know as our captured hearts are ours alone. It's that whole idea of being completely dedicated to one person and growing in the relationship. So that's just a really thoughtful write and very well done.
Beautiful comment. Thank you, Pam. Okay, I have the next poem up. It's by Martha Gettle, and she has a SoundCloud. Oh, maybe not. She doesn't have a SoundCloud for this one. Okay, Thomas, would you mind reading from Martha Gettle?
Yeah, I'll read it.
Thank you.
And I'm going to have to go. Here it is. In the desert, I, into the desert, drowning in pain, been up to my neck in the sandy rain. In the desert, it's so hard to think. Always feel like you're going over the brink. Going over the brink and there's no way out, and all you can do is scream and shout. In the desert with the hot sun pouring down, nobody hears you. You can't make a sound. In the desert I know, in the lonely places to go, the desert agrees will get you down when the burning pain comes around. I've been in the desert in a sea of sand, I've been so low I couldn't even stand. I fell in the burning sand there, writhing in pain beyond compare. In the desert I know, and is a lonely, lonely place to go. In the desert of grief will get you down. The burning pain comes around. It can be a desert you're sinking in. Nobody hears you scream again and again. You can feel the sand piling over your head, but nobody hears a word you've said. End poem.
Well, it was a wonderfully animated read and fantastic, right? You know, the desert of life.
I can't sing it like he does.
No, but you did a wonderful job with it, though. And, you know, you really brought the poem to life. Going over the brink, there's no way out, and all you can do is scream and shout in the desert with the hot sun pouring down. Nobody hears you. You can't make a sound. In the desert, I know, the desert, I know. It's a lonely, lonely place to go. The desert of grief will get you down when the burning pain comes around. Yeah, we all feel like this at times in life, I think, and nothing you can do to fight it sometimes, and you feel like the sand is piling over your head and nobody hears a word you've said. Just fantastic, right? What did you think, Pam?
Oh, I thought this was a wonderful write. I like how she used the desert as an extended metaphor for feeling lost and feeling alone and feeling like you have no purpose in life. It almost reads like an extended metaphor for depression. Just a wonderful lyrical quality to this write, and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. Great comment. And Thomas, what did you think?
Well, I agree. It is such a nice metaphor for both the external feelings of emptiness, like there's nothing around you and nothing you can do with anything that is about you except have it destroy you, and a feeling of internal desert, so that within there's this You know, been so low I couldn't even stand. I fell in the burning sand there, writhing and playing beyond compare. This sense that, you know, not only is the external empty and without purpose, but within the feeling of not having anything to grab a hold of or anything to do, so that it's, there's just this deep feeling of futility, I guess is the right word and phrase, that overpowers, and she presents it very, very well.
Absolutely, yes. Thank you, Thomas. Great comment. Okay, you have a wonderful night, Thomas, and thank you for calling in. Appreciate you.
Oh, thank you. You all have a great night. Take care. Bye.
You too. Bye-bye. Okay, I've got the next poem here. And this is by Salwa. And she has a SoundCloud.
I lost one. Tenderly, tendrement. Oh, dazzling, heavenly night. The flower petals taught me to fly. Tenderly. Oh, nuit céleste, éblouissante. Les pétales, les fleurs, ma prise à voler. Tendrement. End the storm.
Well, it was a beautiful read and such a touching poem, you know. It's only, what, 5 lines here, and 2 of those had 1 word in it. So, you know, she can take you to this place of tenderness and innocence and love and beauty in such few lines and words. It's a masterful poem. What did you think, Pam?
I really liked this one. I see she was, it was for a contest where you had to write a poem in 12 words or less. And those ones are really challenging, and I can see why she got a bronze. She definitely rose up to the challenge. I like that she starts with an exclamation, oh. You know, that's a phrase that can be put so many different emotions into it. And really it's difficult to disconnect any one part because it's beautiful all the way through. But I like how this is about that whole idea of how nature teaches you how to love and to soar and to be gentle, to take time to take care of yourself and be gentle with yourself. So excellent write and very well done.
Wonderful comment. Thank you, Pam. Okay, so I'm just going to finish commenting on the board here and then I will grab the next poem. Here we go. Okay, next poem. Okay, so we're going into some carryovers here, and I'm going to post the first one. This is from the Halloween Haunted contest, Haunted and Haunting contest that I did.
We're being haunted by Halloween poems that should have been over 3 weeks ago.
Yeah. I know, these are carryovers. They didn't make it through 3 different shows.
Oh, I totally get that.
Yeah. Okay, so this is just by Just Another Poet, 6. It's called Haunted. Do you know that feeling of somebody standing just behind you? The strangest at night when you can't bring yourself to open your eyes. The shiver down your spine when the lights flicker over your head. Do you know the fear, the terror of being haunted? End poem. My comment on it is exceptional is the ability to bring the reader right along with you into the haunting. But yeah, it was a wonderful write. What did you think, Pam?
Yeah, I like the atmosphere he creates with this brevity. I like that it's basically one long question, that he doesn't actually relate a specific event or tell a story, but rather that he gets the reader thinking, you know, have you ever noticed this? Have you been through this? And you start looking back and you start thinking back at all those times that you got those shivers down your spine or you felt like you were being watched or you wondered what the heck it was that your cat saw that you didn't. You know, and it gets you thinking. When you get to think about that kind of stuff, then it kind of brings the fear into your mind. So I think this was definitely very well played in what he wanted to create. So very well done.
Great comment. Thank you, Pam. Okay, I'm going to go to the next poem here. Hold on. Okay. And if you wouldn't mind, please, Pam, when you see this.
All right. I have to refresh my page. Oh, there it is. Okay. This is A Haunting in Jerome by Chinti. Haunting in Jerome, Arizona by Chinti. And it goes like this. Drinking in the spirit room on Main Street down in Jerome. Barkeep bringing banker's doom, dizzying down my tipsy dome. Mind messing my words, slurring while I pay the bill. Shuffling out, I see black birds gathering just up the hill. Corvid's crazy cawing, croaking, amassed around a shabby house. Evening sun an hour from setting, feeling bold and liquor doused. Could have kept to Connor Hotel, stumbling upstairs to sleep. Instead, I sauntered quite pell-mell down the street where Corvids creep. Doling drunken, dizzy hiccups, laughing down a battered sidewalk, reaching where the railing stops beneath the cawing, croaking flock, roused by ramshackle roof and dilapidated old stone walls, acting like a fearless, facile goof. Curious to wander its aging halls, laughing and tapping the sign, no trespassing, until I showed up, entering like the lot for mine. Stoop littered with red solo cups, doors jammed, chained and locked, yet I'm clever, though inebriated, panes long gone, windows unblocked, tumbling in sunset, scents faded, inhaling the musty and dusty air, floorboards beneath me groaning, coughing loudly without a care, until I hear a faint and eerie cackling. Getting dark and I'm hearing things, rats and roaches scurrying about, flicking a lighter for the light it brings, barely reaching beyond my route. Strange breeze like breathing cake, blowing my flickering flame light out, but atop a broken dresser steep, and cobweb the candle eases my doubts. Once lit, I swear, a cold whisper lightly lurks like wispy wayfaring, ear twitching at the words I'd hear, doom lives here, it's warning. I rolled and tripped out the window, scaring Corvids again, cawing, croaking, back down the road, not to but fro, until my room I'm safely breathing. Now, not that with ease I find a fright, nor that I fancy superstition, but heart racing on that dark night, within those walls I sense perdition. End poem.
Yeah, you know, this is really, it's an exceptional tale of being in a drunken stupor and flirting with the edges of insanity. You know, this is just insane, the descriptions that he's written here and the situation as well. I thought it was a beautiful job. What did you think, Pam?
Oh, I have to agree. This is just amazing. As always, you know, I would have liked to have Chinti have made a recording or something of this because I think, you know, while it was a delight to read, I feel like he probably could have caught his own flow better. But this has superb rhyme and meter to it. I like how it tells a story that's both dark and humorous, you know, because I think we can all relate to getting the heebie-jeebies on a night where we've had a little too much to drink, and you can just imagine it all, the noise, I think, and the fact that he involves so many little different sounds, adds to the eeriness of the right. I think this is just really very well done.
Well said. Thank you, Pam. I appreciate that. And I'm going to post the next poem here. This is called Perspective by Parenchyma. Perspective. For the memory of 30 years, you took me to a mansion, bedding me in frills and lace under cherry inlays and onlays, courtesan waves of love in mantles, spiral turns and chandeliers and poster beds, wicked wonders, whispers, and smooth oiled wood staircase, best viewed from floor. Bed me things, sweet things and sparkles, beverage and balcony, bed and breakfast, and I carried you on wings to the mountaintop and saw the sweep of your love in the river waters below, the curve of the small of your back and across your derriere revealed again in the valley road below, the wind-blown pine sharing our dizzy height. I see you reclining in distant mountains, the swirls in broken stone like the tresses of your youth. I see your face in the duvet-covered clouds, reflected in blue eyes, the kiss of the breeze, captivating perspective, pensive roadrunner, falcon soaring succulently below, till the summer sunset closed the windows of my eyes, but not the portal of my soul. You make it easy to love you. And he says in his author's notes, famous painter Hogarth made a statement. The most beautiful line in nature is that formed by the small of a wingman's back down her area, derriere, end quote. But, you know, I thought it was a descriptive and emotion-filled poem with an elegant flow and rhythmicality. It was just a beautiful, right? What did you think, Pam?
Oh, I have to agree. And, you know, I already liked the poem, but when I saw the quote that they had written to and how they had not only matched the quote with the imagery they provided, but the way they shaped the poem as if it's the curve of a woman's back, I thought that is just really stellar. It's intriguing. It's beautiful. It's emotive. I like how it's about those gestures of love and those moments of beauty reflected in the eyes and, you know, memories formed over 30 years. So just a beautiful, heartfelt write and very well done.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Pam. So that's it for poetry tonight. Would you like to say anything about shows coming
up? Would you
up?
Like me to read something?
Sure, if you wouldn't mind.
All right, I'll go grab something real quick, a Pam Ray special. Tell you what, I'll grab the last poem I read, won a golden, and it'll fit with the last poem because it's a sensual. So, and I think that also works
cool.
Well with your best. So obviously you'll be the only one to comment, but that works. All right. So this is Honeyed and Metallic, and it goes like this. Use me as your surat canvas. For you I will lay completely still, breathing in the scent of your tobacco and cedar aura, the exquisite torture of muted colors placed upon shivering flesh, your paint dripping down, every dot placed with the precision of a master artist. You have a talent for making time a halcyon fog, iotas of earthen overlays, a deliberate spread of electric vulnerability. And in return, I will paint your will, every whimpered pleading, bold strokes of color. I taste the air upon my tongue, honeyed and metallic, wishing it was the taste of you baptizing my taste buds, the holy water of your stream, awakening my senses to the pleasured anticipation of being the realization of your genius. End poem.
Wow, that was excellently written. You know, this is, it's got a beauty to it and a gentleness and a forthrightness that just shines through. And I really like the longing perspective of the right as well. You know, with the precision of a master artist, you have a talent of for making time a halcyon fog, iotas of an earthen overlays, a deliberate spread of electric vulnerability. Just a beautifully descriptive, right, Pam? And wonderfully expressed.
Thank you so much.
Yeah,
and I'm really sorry, but do you mind if I quickly mention a couple of upcoming shows that really need rights?
No, absolutely.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thank you. Well, first of all, Intimidus Rex. Rex is running a contest for tomorrow's Rhythm and Rhyme with music from Joanne Shaw Taylor, wonderful blues guitarist and singer. I highly recommend checking that out. For After Midnight, he's running a contest with quotes from the guy who hosted The Twilight Zone, Rod Sterling. So check that out. And then for Twisted Tuesdays, I'm running a contest with artwork and quotes from Norval Morisot, who is actually a Canadian Ojibwe artist, or he was, he passed away, who was known as the Picasso of the North. And so I highly recommend checking out all those contests and topic boards and seeing if anything inspires people.
Yeah, absolutely, yes. Thank you. I appreciate that. So thank you for joining me tonight, Pam. Would you like to say anything about any upcoming shows besides the contests?
Well, as always, I would like people to make sure to check out the topic boards and the contests all our hosts and hostesses put up, because you're always sure to find something that suits your taste and inspires you. And readers and commenters are always welcome. And don't forget to join us. Oh, yeah, Richard Wiseman has a contest running for the Thanksgiving show that he'll be doing. And I don't know if there's a contest up yet, but Fill My Eyes should have a contest up now or shortly for The Art of Seduction on Wednesday. It's definitely going to be a great week of poetry. And great show tonight, Gray.
Thank you, Pam. I appreciate you being here. Take care and have a good night. Much love, Pam.